This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. Thanks so much for joining me today. In the next half hour, we'll have a report by Christopher Clymer-Kurtz on a new plan to revitalize and heal an urban landscape in Harrisonburg, plus his conversations with two JMU students who could be harmed unless Congress does something about DACA since Trump rescinded that Obama-era policy. Also, a report on how Trump's presidency is influencing Virginia's statewide races this election season, and, well, it's stink bug season again. Have scientists learned anything new about how to deal with them this fall? But first, Governor McAuliffe has doubled down on Virginia's craft brew industry, but some in the business wonder if that sector's explosive growth has come at the expense of local players, and if it's sustainable. WMRA's Jesse Nadler reports on the craft brew enterprise in Virginia.
It's no secret that outgoing Governor Terry McAuliffe has an ongoing love affair with Virginia's craft brew industry.
But there's nothing like enjoying a cold Virginia beer right here in the Commonwealth. That's why I even installed a kegerator at the Executive Mansion.
A kegerator. That's when you know it's serious. So why all the brew love? It's part of his administration's push to diversify the economy by attracting businesses in new and growing fields. Craft brew spans several sectors of the economy: agriculture, tourism, manufacturing. Craft brew is good for a lot of businesses. And it's not just about the beer.
Virginia has a good apple source. We're blessed with a number of orchards within close proximity of our cidery here. We source all local from within about 30 miles of the cidery.
Lindsay Dorier is a vice president at Bold Rock, a five-year-old hard cidery headquartered along Route 151's Wine and Brew Corridor in Nelson County.
You're more likely to purchase a Bold Rock hard cider when you visited us and you understand the ethos of the brand by actually being in the epicenter of it.
Other signs of McAuliffe's bromance with brew. This year, he signed a bill that doubles the number of banquet licenses a brewery or winery can obtain in a year, which allows it to participate in more festivals. More festivals equal more tourism dollars. He announced that Shenandoah Beer Works Trail, a route of 14 breweries in the area, received over $22,000 to develop a passport program. He recently approved a $15,000 grant to Stablecraft Brewery in Augusta County and a $50,000 grant to Three Notched in Charlottesville. In exchange, the breweries will add new jobs and buy Virginia-grown products. But his biggest brew coup by far has been to entice four major West Coast craft breweries to open East Coast facilities in Virginia: Deschutes, Stone, Green Flash, and Ballast Point. All received millions of dollars in public funds. Stone alone received $33 million worth of public money to set up shop in Richmond. Such sweetheart deals are not uncommon, but for native players such as Devil's Backbone, it's been a point of friction with McAuliffe's mission.
We have a belief that companies, especially wealthy companies, shouldn't be utilizing taxpayer funding to grow their businesses. You know, we found a business solution to grow our business.
Steve Crandall is the CEO of Devil's Backbone, and he's referring to the 2016 sale of his company to Anheuser-Busch InBev, a move that ended the brand's craft status but allowed the company to keep growing amid stiffening competition from out-of-state. He says he's beer positive and has nothing against the out-of-state breweries. His COO, Hayes Humphrey, says the problem isn't so much the public funding itself, but rather whom the government decides it goes to and how much.
There have been a few incentive packages offered to a few craft breweries around the state, but when you compare that to the packages that have been put together for out-of-state craft brewers to come open a second facility here, you know, there's no comparison between those dollars.
McAuliffe's big push into craft is happening, ironically, in a cooling market. People aren't knocking back as much craft as they were a few years ago. Production volume dropped to 5% from 8% last year, which itself was down from 18% growth in 2013. According to the industry journal Craft Brewing Business, McAuliffe's big bet on craft may actually backfire. Or is it backwash? A clue: Stone laid off 5% of its workforce last year, according to one industry observer.
It set off shockwaves in the entire industry. That great heyday of growth is slowing significantly. It's more difficult for these little craft breweries to get out and make a decent living.
Nathan and Irma Bailey are still going to try.
What are we looking at?
So this is our brewing system right here.
They launched Great Valley Farm Brewery in Rockridge County just 1 year ago, specializing in Belgian beer. They make a living selling pints from their tap room, offering scenic views of the southern end of the county.
We've got a lot of entrepreneurial spirit, you know, my wife and I, and we just thought, you know, we can do this and, you know, make a quality product. And, you know, we've got a beautiful location here, so we wanted to kind of share that with everybody.
To set himself apart, he's growing grapes as well and hired a 25-year vintner veteran to help him make wine. Why? Remember the magic word, diversify, because not everyone likes beer. For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
Unused land within city limits has potential, and some community organizers have begun turning one such area in Harrisonburg into a place of social and ecological restoration. WMRA's Christopher Clymer Kurtz reports.
Organizers of the proposed Black's Run Forest Farm and Folk School say that the nearly 3.5 acres, which includes Salvation Army land and 2 city-owned lots, will be the site of an orchard for native fruits and nuts, a forest for animal habitat and growing timber and firewood, and a place for watershed restoration, educational workshops, and community health. It's on the proposed route of the North End Greenway Bike Path and Corridor Park, nestled behind the Salvation Army Center for Worship and Service on Ashby Avenue.
It would be several different kinds of parks all together, along with alternative transportation and also food and fuel and medicine and rest and demonstrating all these different kinds of things that we can do here in the city.
Jonathan McRae is a farmer and facilitator who, with Vine and Fig, a community and nonprofit organization committed to the creation of sustainable systems in Harrisonburg, is incubating the farm for 2 years, establishing funding and program partnerships with educational and other institutions. They have already hosted one class and another is scheduled, and middle school groups have helped with reforestation and waterway repairs.
This landscape has been extremely degraded. The stream has been wounded and abused, as have the neighbors and those who live in the watershed because of the effect of these toxins that are here. And so how do we remediate the toxins that are in our soil, but also in our society and in our souls? These are all part of the same work.
Organizers are pursuing leases of nominal amounts of money for the city-owned lots in exchange for being stewards of the land.
In accordance with President Trump's ending of President Obama's Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, or DACA, October 5th was the last day that some eligible Dreamers, also called documented residents, could apply for renewal of their DACA status. While Congress is working out what to do, many of these young people are anxious about their options. Christopher spoke with 2 students at James Madison University and filed this report.
When he first learned about DACA, Diego Salinas simultaneously was shocked and felt its saving grace.
I didn't really know about DACA or the whole scope of my situation as an undocumented immigrant until DACA was already starting to roll out. That's when my parents clued me in on the fact that I was undocumented. So it was a bit of a big shock, but it got kind of washed away really fast because I had DACA.
Salinas was born in El Salvador. When he was 5 years old in 2001, he came with his parents and 2 younger brothers to live in the Richmond area. Under DACA, he said, filing renewal paperwork became routine. Now Salinas is a senior theater and Italian major at JMU, and he's feeling anxious.
I was kind of living in this kind of limbo, happy. And then when DACA was rescinded, that's when everything just kind of blew up again. And this time it's possible that I don't have, a saving grace coming anytime soon.
As of early last month, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services is no longer accepting DACA applications. Some current Dreamers, as they're called, can seek renewal, but only those whose permits expire before March 5, 2018. Virginia is among the states that have filed a lawsuit to block the ending of DACA, and Congress has some legislative solutions in mind. But for now, as he is ineligible to reapply, Salinas marks November 1 of next year as the day he will no longer be a legal resident.
From there, it all just bunches up because without being able to get a job or drive, then, what can I do?
Michaela Escudero is another senior at JMU. She's studying international affairs. And on a breezy afternoon, she said that just last week, she learned that her DACA status was renewed.
I'm really grateful. At the same time, I feel a little bit guilty because I have a lot of friends who are documented and are unable to renew.
Escudero's mother brought her to the Valley from Argentina when she was 6 years old. As a senior at Waynesboro High School, she took advanced classes and wanted to go to college, but her worry that her undocumented status would mean she wouldn't be accepted into college kept Escudero from making a decision until, just in time, President Obama executed his DACA policy. She quickly enrolled at Blue Ridge Community College and was able to get a driver's license and work. Later, in-state college tuition was granted for documented students in Virginia, making full-time school more affordable. Escudero said that documented students feel their prospects narrowing.
For many of us, we are graduating now. Others aren't going to be able to graduate or don't know whether they're going to be able to work here anymore. So a lot of things are uncertain right now.
For both Escudero and Salinas, it's almost inconceivable to them not to be able to stay in the country they know and love.
I feel American. I've lived here in the Valley for 17 years. I barely remember my own country. You just feel lost and you're scared because you know you have to make a decision about whether you want to risk staying here and being deported or you want to go live abroad or go back to your home country and start all over again.
Virginia is my home. You know, I'm an Eagle Scout. I played Little League Baseball. I played soccer. If you just look at me, if you just saw like the resume of like my life, it would look like I'm your average all-American guy. But when you look for one piece of paper that everyone else has, I don't have it. And then that negates everything else.
There are 12,000 Dreamers in Virginia, and Escudero and Salinas are determined to keep what they and so many others are facing in the public eye. Last month on campus, they helped organize a silent march and then rally where Salinas spoke.
Because the light will always drive out the darkness. Thank you. God bless JMU. God bless the United States of America.
They want pressure on the politicians who are deciding their fates.
They're using DACA as a political ball, and it's very important for them to pass legislation because we pay taxes, we work, there's a lot of things that we contribute. And we want to stay here, and we want to keep contributing.
DACA was a Band-Aid solution in the absence of legislation to protect people like Escudero and Salinas as they enriched the country and pursued their dreams. That Band-Aid has been ripped off now, bringing new urgency to the need for a permanent solution. For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clammer-Kurtz.
Republican President Donald Trump is not on the ballot this year, but candidates are feeling the need to respond to his historically controversial presidency. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope has the story.
Candidates up and down the ballot have all kinds of ways of talking about Donald Trump. Perhaps the most shocking was from Democrat Ralph Northam, the candidate for governor. Over the summer, he said this in a television advertisement.
I'm listening carefully to Donald Trump, and I think he's a narcissistic maniac. Whatever you call him, we're not letting him bring his hate into Virginia.
That was how Northam talked about Trump during a hotly contested primary campaign against challenger Tom Perriello. Coming from Northam, who is a pediatric neurologist, it had the ring of a medical diagnosis, at least for Democrats. During a debate with Republican candidate for governor Ed Gillespie, though, the Republican tried to transform that diagnosis into a liability.
You know, what are you going to do as our governor call the White House and say, please put me through to the narcissistic maniac? We've got to get more of our ships and submarines built here in Virginia. I will work on behalf of the people of Virginia to make sure that we are creating jobs, raising take-home pay, and helping people lift themselves out of poverty.
Mr. Northam, rebuttal.
Well, thank you. And Ed, I would just say if the shoe fits, wear it. And I would encourage everybody to look up the diagnostic criteria for narcissism, and they'll see that it does come quite close to an accurate diagnosis.
That's a diagnosis that may have changed over the last few months, though. Quentin Kidd of Christopher Newport University says Democrats were planning on a strategy of opposing Donald Trump, but
that understanding has evolved on the part of Democratic candidates and party officials over the last several months, and I think that reflects Northam's views on Trump.
Northam is now talking about working with Trump, if Trump is willing to work with Virginia. Meanwhile, President Trump issued an unexpected endorsement of Gillespie, who is unwilling to answer questions about whether or not he's asking Trump to campaign with him in Virginia. Kidd says that raises new questions about how much influence Trump will have in November.
Can Donald Trump stay away from Virginia and leave it alone if one of his greatest nemeses, Barack Obama, is actively campaigning for Ralph Northam? I don't think Donald Trump can leave that alone.
That does not just include the top of the ticket. Take the election to fill the seat vacated by Republican delegate Dave Albo of Fairfax County. The Republican in that race is Lolita Manchetto Smoke. She says Trump is a positive disruptor.
Sometimes, in order to generate change, in order to get new energy, to actually feel passionate about a new beginning, you need positive disruption. And I see Trump as a positive disruptor.
The Democrat in that race, Kathy Tran, disagrees with that assessment.
Like Trump, Lolita would defund Planned Parenthood. That's definitely not a positive disruption. And Trump care, in its most extreme form, would take away health care from 800,000 Virginians. Again, not a positive disruption.
So what kind of influence will Trump have on Election Day? Stephen Farnsworth at the University of Mary Washington says Trump will be a net negative for Republicans.
You're looking at a president who's pretty unpopular in most of Virginia, but particularly so in the Washington suburbs, where a lot of government workers and people connected to the government really don't like some of the tumult that is the hallmark of the Trump presidency so far.
Ultimately, Farnsworth says the real problem for Republicans is that Trump is sucking all the oxygen from the campaign trail.
When you think about the race for governor 4 years ago, when Ken Cuccinelli and Terry McAuliffe squared off, we had a lot of media attention. These candidates were very, very visible, very vigorous campaigns, and that's a complete 180 from what's going on this election cycle.
Ultimately, the decision will be in the hands of voters. If Democrats win the statewide races and pick up a few House seats, that will be perceived as a defeat for Trump. If Republicans win, that will be perceived as a win for Trump, which may ultimately reshuffle the deck for 2018 and beyond. I'm Michael Pope.
Stink bugs are back with a vengeance this season. Two not very cold winters in a row have helped this invasive species thrive and multiply. But in the past few years, scientists have also learned more about ways to control them. Virginia Public Radio's Robbie Harris explains how.
The sound of stink bugs flying around indoors has become a harbinger of autumn. This one's been circling above me the whole time I've been writing this story. She looks like she's trying to get into the ceiling, but each time she hits it, she bounces off. Female stink bugs are slightly larger than males, but both can get through the tiny openings in most shutters and soffits in houses and buildings.
And we have noticed that bugs will move up. When they land on a structure, they will crawl upwards until they basically hit something that stops their progress, and then they start searching for a crevice.
Tom Kuhar teaches entomology at Virginia Tech.
Right now, they're attracted to dark spaces because they're looking to find a place to overwinter.
That's why this time of year, stink bugs can't be fooled by one of those clever homemade water pan and incandescent lamp traps. They won't fly toward the light because now it's a very different urge that drives them. Warmth, comfort, and the company of others like them.
The bugs overwinter in huge masses. Most people don't get to see that. They see the ones that have basically broken away from the overwintering pack and are very likely losing their fat reserves that are going to help them get through the winter. And they're desperately looking to start the spring when it really may not be spring. It may be inside a warm house, and they're probably going to die.
Kuhar points out there are several species of native stink bugs that don't invade people's living spaces each autumn. It's only the brown marmorated variety from Asia. First identified in Pennsylvania in 1989, it quickly gained a foothold with no local predators to keep it in check. But recently, some of our homegrown insects have begun to develop a taste for cilantro. That's how people describe the scent of a crushed stink bug.
We did a study to try to find out if spiders around people's homes actually, you know, can attack, sort of retain in their webs and consume brown marmorated stink bug. And we did find a couple of groups of spiders that do a pretty good job with them as well. So, you know, for those homeowners that have stink bug issues, let the spiders do their work, I would say.
Tracy Leskey is an entomology researcher at the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
We've also learned that there are a lot of interesting insects that eat the eggs of brown marmorated stink bug. For example, we found that katydids, of all things, eat brown marmorated stink bug eggs in trees.
And reinforcements in the battle against stink bugs have also arrived also from Asia.
That is the non-stinging wasp, Trisulcus japonicus, also known as the samurai wasp. This insect has been in quarantine for a number of years. This is a parasitoid, which means that this small non-stinging wasp, about the size of a comma on a piece of paper.
Scientists first positively identified the tiny predator in Maryland in 2015. Now it's being seen in large numbers in Northern Virginia and several other states. But right now, say the experts, the only line of defense against bugs desperate to get inside is sealing up the crevices they seek. And some patience. This mad dash for warm buildings lasts about 3 weeks, and it's almost over. I'm Robbie Harris.
I'm Chanel Verani, and this is Our Island Universe.
Did life arise on the young Earth due to natural processes that were taking place? Or was life brought to Earth from somewhere else? In a new study published looking at the physics of early Earth, a team of astrobiologists suggest that ribonucleic acid, or RNA, was likely already in place as late as 4.2 billion years ago. The scientists suggest that the young Earth already had surface ponds of water, but this was also a very violent time in that asteroids and leftover rocks after the Earth formed were still raining down. The investigators suggest that the raw materials for life were on those meteorites. That the building blocks of life could have been ferried to Earth is now also supported by other evidence. Astronomers at NASA, under conditions found in space, have now been able to reproduce three key components of our hereditary material in the laboratory. We once thought the Earth was at the center of it all, with the sun and planets revolving around us. We then thought the sun was at the center of our galaxy. We are now in the midst of another paradigm-changing revolution when we are starting to realize that the processes that gave rise to you and me are not unique to Earth either.
I am Chanel Verani, director of the John C. Wells Planetarium at James Madison University.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bip and Dolly Frazier, Les and Johnny Grady, Klein May Realty, Eugene Stoltz, Swiss Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, Nancy Barber, Pam and Jim Huggins, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of the Community Foundation of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. If you'd like to support our news coverage, go to WMRA.org, mouse over news, then click on News and Information Fund. All our stories are archived at that website, and be sure to click like on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio and follow me on Twitter at WMRA News to get the latest on our coverage. And don't forget to keep up each morning with the WMRA Daily, our weekday early morning news podcast. Listen at WMRA.org, and you can sign up for the podcast there. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and Morning Edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.